Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark.
When Nighttime Falls, Volume 6, Story Number 1. I'm a paramedic. Well, I was an EMT at the time. I was taking a long-distance transfer across Texas around 3 in the morning. I'd been driving for several hours after dropping the patient off when I thought I saw a dead body on the side of the road. I was thinking maybe I was seeing things. I turned around and went back to make sure. I wasn't. I found a very dismembered body on the side of the road. While making sure that there were no signs of life, I hear a cry coming from the woods. Sounded almost like witch noises. We shined our lights, our flashlights that is, and we see a woman covered in blood crying in the fetal position near the woods. Turns out they were walking hand in hand when a drunk driver hit the person but missed the woman and obviously kept going. Pretty creepy. Story number 2. My dad was a long-haul driver and told me this story years ago. He was in Detroit trying to find some factory in the middle of the night and was a bit lost, and ended up having to drive through a real sketchy area. This was pre-GPS and cell phone days. As he was entering the area, he got pulled over by a cop. The cop says to him something to the effect of, "You must be lost. Even we don't go through that area at night." My dad, being the stubborn bastard he is, told the cop he had to get to where he was going and had already lost enough time trying to get back on course and needed to go through the area. The cop proceeded to tell him not to stop for anything or anyone, told them to roll through stop signs and red lights, and if anyone stepped out in front of the truck, to flag them down, to turn them into a grease spot on the road and we'll deal with it in the morning. He made it through without incident, but I imagine he was pooping himself the entire time, considering a police officer told him that running red lights and vehicular manslaughter were better options than stopping the truck. Story number 3. The church I grew up in supported several missionaries to the Navajo Reservation in northeast Arizona. There ran 2 or 3 Baptist churches up there. We went up there often to help build houses, schools, etc. One trip, when I was about 12 or 13 years old, I was dozing off in the front passenger seat of our 15-passenger church van. The trip leader, John, a practical no-nonsense Vietnam vet, a carpenter, was driving. I sort of startled awake, every hair of my body standing on end, and I heard John praying under his breath, "Jesus, Lord, protect us. Jesus, Lord, protect us." His face was lit only by the panel lights, but I could see him staring straight ahead, his hands gripped tightly on the wheel. The speedometer said 85 miles per hour, and I thought it was strange since our driver always stayed around 65. Then I looked out the window on my side, and in the running lights of this van, I swear I think I saw a gaunt, naked man running on all fours alongside our van on the highway. I almost pooped in my pants. "Skinwalkers," John said, "just pray." You better believe I prayed. This thing stayed with us for about 5 minutes, then just sort of pulled short and disappeared into the desert. Northeast Arizona is a Navajo reservation, well known for urban legends of skinwalkers, corrupted medicine men or witches who can transform into animals, usually wolves or coyotes. Next story. My parents would go camping in Wisconsin every weekend. We lived in Minnesota. When I was younger, we were driving home late one night, backcountry road, no one else around, pitch black, trees almost connecting with each other above the road. Very surreal. Anyway, my younger brother starts getting antsy and pointed out a dark shape that he said was following us. I thought he was trying to scare me, but sure enough, something was there, running through the trees and keeping pace with the car. We told the parents, who of course didn't believe us. Suddenly it shot forward and seemed to disappear, but as we took a turn, the headlights swept over the trees and we all saw a flash of red eyes in the bushes. My dad slowed the car to a crawl, and when the eyes blinked and moved closer, he took off. My brother and I are still convinced that it was a hellhound, a grim, or something that was trying to follow us home. Next story. I used to be a driver, and let me tell you, you see all kind of crazy stuff at night on the road. I've always been a night owl, so I can't chalk it up to exhaustion, but I'm sure that none of it was what it seemed. First, it was a giant shaggy black dog running along and eventually across the road. A man with yellow eyes and a long black duster standing in the road smiling. More than one light in the sky, moving and changing directions at speeds that made my head spin to think about it. Phantom deer, probably real deer, but it sure didn't seem like it at the time. Injured people walking on the side of the road. Saw a few, only one ever turned out to be real. Glad I kept stopping to check. Lights in the trees like fairies, and my personal favorite. An enormous black creature with extremely long appendages and a hunched torso that tried to swipe at vehicles. Yes, there's a lot of phenomena out there, and I understand their explanations, but damned if they didn't seem completely real and scary. I witnessed them. Some of them so much so that it seemed like a good idea to stop instead of risking it. I didn't believe in ghosts and monsters, but some of those things I saw really gave me pause. Next story. Well, back in the day, I had several odd jobs that required I drive across the country. One was shipping horses. I drove the truck from barns to shows or vice versa, and the other was working as road crew for a rock band. I was very, very young, like between 16 and 20 years old. For reference, I'm female, short, athletic, and definitely the odd one out at a lot of rest stops and gas stations along the major routes. I'm also tattooed and had a red mohawk, which made me stand out a lot. Now, several weird things happened that I remember. But first, I want to say, Navajo Nation is indeed really, really creepy. Always drove through at night, too. Never meant to plan it that way, but that's always how it happened. Other creepy place is northern Utah. Totally hills have eyes up there. Anyway, here's story number one. I was driving from Galveston, Texas to New Orleans, Louisiana. Galveston had just been hit by the hurricane and there was a weird serial killer moving through that city. So the vibe had already begun as weird. Just as I crossed the border from Texas to Louisiana, I started to get super tired. It was really late, maybe around 3 a.m., tried to find a gas station to pull over, rest, and fill up, but all of them were closed. Gave up, pulled into the next one, which was closed, parked in the far corner of the lot, killed my car, it was a convertible Jeep at the time, and laid my seat back to sleep. Everything seemed quiet. There were a few lights from the station that were on 24/7, but I parked far enough away that they really wouldn't bother my eyes. I woke up with a start. I had been dreaming, but I had this gut-like instinct to wake up. I immediately saw someone covered in mud, wearing rags, holding a knife, advancing slowly towards my car. He was maybe 5 feet away, moving forward. My adrenaline kicked in immediately and I switched the car on. At that point, he let out some guttural growl and launched toward the car as I'm backing up. I barely missed him as he was grabbing at the vehicle. With the headlights on, I could see he was covered in sores and the knife was all rusty. I sped out of there, didn't sleep again, all the way to New Orleans. It freaked me out very bad. I also never again slept in my car. The idea he could have been watching me sleep for who knows how long freaked me out. My car was also convertible. He could have easily cut his way in. That image of waking up to some crazy person advancing on me with a knife has also given me nightmares for many years. And this is my second story. I was hauling horses from Kansas to Tucson, Arizona, driving a big Ford truck, a dually, with a small trailer carrying three horses. Near Gallup, around 2 a.m., the back inner tire on the passenger side blew out. I pulled off the road and assessed the situation. There was zero chance I could change the tire myself, given the trailer, on the dually truck situation. And I'm tired and weak from exhaustion, so I called a tow company and tried to find a temporary boarding place for the horses. It's the morning of Easter Sunday. Literally no one is open. I'm going through the yellow pages, calling tow company after tow company. Yes, this is pre-smartphone days. Finally, I find a Native American tow company who also has a ranch with boarding for the horses and a truck to come grab the trailer. What a godsend. But the guy and his wife who ran the company told me to be very careful not to leave my truck during the two-hour drive it would take for them to arrive. They said this in such an emphatic way, I began to get really scared. They told me not to open the door for anyone and to keep the doors locked. No one was really on the road, so I was confused as to who could really be a threat out there. But I took them seriously and locked my doors and waited. I kept hearing this weird scratching sound at the back panel window of the truck, like someone was trying to open the small window back there. A couple of times the truck would sway, which I figured was the horses. It was pitch black out, no wind. I heard a few footsteps, but chalked it up to the wind or my imagination. It was getting kind of scary out there, and I was alone and unable to move. Eventually, the nice couple with the tow truck and the other truck to haul the pony showed up. They immediately and first moved me from my cabin to the cabin of their tow truck, told me not to move or open the door under any circumstances. The couple was super fast. The lady dealt with the horses. The man got my truck up on the tow bed. Then they drove me to their ranch after the man dropped my truck off at a local shop owned by his cousin, who he said would handle the flat on Monday. Anyway, long story short, this wonderful couple took care of me and the horses, got my truck tire fixed. As I'm ready to leave on Monday afternoon, there's a story in the local news of a woman with a flat tire was murdered alongside the same stretch of highway on Sunday evening. She'd been out changing a tire and looked like someone murdered her. I asked the couple, and they didn't say much other than to never ever get out of the car at night along this highway. Ever. Said it with certain death. They also gave me some bags of potpourri stuff to have and to burn in my truck cabin for protection. I felt very lucky to find these nice people. They definitely looked out for me, and never once did I feel unsafe staying at their house. I was 18 at the time, and definitely knew nothing about safety along trucking routes. But from then on, when I drove through that area, I didn't stop if I could avoid it. I loaded up on gas, checked the tires in Flagstaff, and rode on through Albuquerque. There's weird stuff out there on the reservation, and I don't pretend to know or want to know what it is. Next story. I do hazmat certification for truck drivers here in the state of Nevada. We run one of the only offices that do them in the state, so I see tons of drivers every day. The amount of UFO type stories I hear from drivers is crazy. Always when they're driving up through the Grand Wasteland that is Nevada between Vegas and Reno. Almost always they include colored lights moving faster than any plane they've ever seen and very erratically. Sometimes affecting electrical equipment in the vehicle, causing the radio static, etc. A lot of the guys assume these are aliens from Area 51 or something of that like, but just as many think they could be government test crafts out of Nellis or Area 51. There's also been a few stories of strange creatures crossing the road in the night. Most common depiction is hairless and four-legged, very possibly some kind of genetic mutation from the atomic test site affecting a coyote or something. Either way, unsettling stuff. God bless Nevada. Next story. I'm required to go from Texas to Idaho and Texas to Indiana and Texas to Ithaca, New York regularly by van. My drives usually last 18 to 20 hours. Sometimes I have wildlife in my vehicle. Sometimes I'm on my way to pick an animal up. My job involves a lot of hands-on stuff. Driving is just a secondary part of it. I probably book anywhere from 1,000 to 10,000 miles in a week. That being said, I've seen a lot of road. I have seen so much death from accidents, death from dumb mistakes. I've seen motorcycles split into many pieces as they slide on the road. I've seen a bridge collapse on several cars. I've seen hitchhikers, stray animals, wildlife, car chases, fresh accidents, tornadoes, etc. I think you get it. There was one time, though, unlike anything else, I was on one of my shortest drives, but it was late in the night, about 1 a.m. I had to be in Austin, Texas as soon as possible, as a citizen had found a bird that was incapacitated but alive in Houston, Texas. The bird had been sedated. I had to get it to a specialist as soon as possible, or it would surely die. Fortunately, the vet who specialized in this particular wildlife said she had to be up for surgery early anyway, and if I could make it up by 4 a.m., she would take it. The highway between Austin and Houston is called Highway 290. It has a few places where it forces you to stop, but there are a few places that are completely undeveloped and very, very dark. I wasn't tired. I was on high alert. After leaving the town of Page, there's a long stretch of very dark highway. No roadside lights, no development, just tree-lined, two lanes, highway going in both directions. I remember the highway kind of dipped down shortly after that dark stretch and open up to the highway system that takes you to Bastrop or San Marcos. It wasn't unusual to be alone out there. I should also note that I'm an avid bird watcher. In fact, it's my job to report sightings and behavior on a daily basis. Even at night when driving, I can spot a hawk or dove curtailing the power lines along the road. At night, it wasn't unusual to see a deer or coyote pacing the outside or even the middle of the roads. This time, though, as my car dipped down the highway and the bridge to Bastrop came into sight, something came into view so big and white. I braked hard. My car jolted to a stop as the sheer, vast, white mass moved over me quickly. I could hear it whoosh. I don't know what came over me. I opened my window quickly, and the bird in the kennel behind me started making a horrible noise. I forgot to look out the window and looked behind me, and there, inside the van, was the sheer white mass with a huge beaked face and dark red eyes. I was in full panic. I couldn't move a muscle or make a sound. I was absolutely horrified to see what I saw. All while this little bird was letting out a horrible scream repeatedly. Mind you, it's supposed to be sedated. It was like a knife to my nerves and had cut all functionality. The white ghost-like creature appeared to wave its hand, and I felt my mouth open and let out a raspy scream. The white creature bolted right in my face. I literally peed a little right in my jeans, and my butt clenched harder than a bank vault door. The creature moved past me and out of the front windshield. It turned back to look at my wide-eyed, frightened face and took off into the sky. This is the first time I've said anything about this. I still get shaken when I think about those dark eyes and the swiftness it moved into my sight. I've never seen anything like that again. It's been 6 years now. To this day, it's the only paranormal interaction I can truly say I've experienced. And I hope it's the last. Next story. I was about in the third year of my career. I was taking a load of paper from Alabama to Ohio. While the paper mill I loaded at was in the middle of nowhere and was probably 65 miles away from the nearest interstate, I was a little low on my legal driving hours, so I figured I would spend the night at the shipper. Well, the shipper didn't allow overnight parking. Great. So I got loaded and rolled out. I set my GPS for the nearest truck stop, which was about 70 miles away. There was one closer, but it didn't have showers. So I'm rolling along this winding country road, just taking my time because it's dark. I flip my high beams on when I get to a straight section of the road, and I can see a figure walking. I remember thinking how brave they must be. Well, as I got closer, I noticed the figure's a man in an all-white suit. As my lights uncovered more of him, I noticed he had a bag slung over his shoulder, not a big one, but big enough to notice. As I started to ease the truck over to the left side of the road to pass by him, he turned and stuck his thumb out as if to hitch a ride. Now, I normally wouldn't have a problem with that, except the fact that when he turned towards the truck, the place where his face was supposed to be was completely red and blank. No eyes, no noise, no mouth, blank, red and blank. I must have hit my door lock button about 30 times. I made it to the truck stop and waited until daylight to take my shower. I don't know what I saw that night, but whatever it was, it couldn't ride with me. Next story. A few months back, I was taking a race hauler back east from California. I was on I-10 in New Mexico. I got tired and decided to stop on an off-ramp in parts of New Mexico. There are off-ramps that are literally nothing more than an off and on-ramp. No roads to take when you exit. They typically have wide shoulders, and I didn't consider it an unsafe place to stop. When I took the exit, there was a small travel trailer pulled over, and it appeared the driver was getting some sleep, so I felt better not really being the only one in the middle of nowhere. I slept for 3 or 4 hours and woke up. It was still very dark out and cold. I looked in my mirror and noticed the camper was gone. I don't remember how long I sat there, maybe a few minutes, and then looked in my mirror again and noticed a vehicle very close to the rear of my trailer with no lights on. Honestly, I saw the silhouette and thought it was a cop. Didn't think much of it, figured he was taking a break or maybe even running my plates, as the rig I had was expensive and quite commonly stolen. A few more minutes passed and I saw the headlights flash. Unsure what was happening, I turned on the truck and prepared to get the hell out of there. The headlights flashed quickly 2 more times, and then I heard a door slam. An older Chevy Silverado took off past me and crossed over the highway and headed west on 10. I waited about 5 minutes, and after turning on all the exterior lights, I walked around the truck. The best I can tell, they were planning to siphon diesel out of my tanks. The cap was off the right side tank, and also the side entry door had pry marks near the latch. Still freaks me out a bit, and I'm more careful of where I stop these days. Next story. This isn't my story, but an old friend of mine's. In the 90s, John was an IT guy in parts of eastern Iowa and far west Illinois. He was used to driving from one account to another either late at night or early in the morning. He'd pick a halfway point to use as a rest stop and to grab one of those awful paper cup coffees from the machines while he was there. Early one morning, about 4:30 a.m., he was in Iowa, and he stopped at a wide spot in the road just to rest a moment. He parked, and there weren't any other people there except for a couple of semis who looked like they'd been there for quite a while. He went into the men's room, and it was deserted. He used the bathroom and went to the sink to wash his hands. He said he caught some movement from the corner of his eye, and there was a very tall, very thin man standing right in the middle of the entrance about 15 feet away. He was dressed all in black, and he said the guy's eyes were pitch black. The man was giggling to himself, and John swore he was at least 8 feet tall. He glanced down to grab a paper towel from the machine, and when he looked up, the man was so close he could hear him breathing with a loud, bubbly sound. There's no way he could have crossed 15 feet in 1 second. As he told it, this man, or this thing, slowly smiled at him, and it wasn't a smile. It was a bearing of serrated, sharp teeth, and this thing starts chuckling like he's looking at a 3-piece KFC meal. My friend screamed, "Jesus, help me," and ran for his car. My friend said that things got startled, like he wasn't supposed to be able to move. He felt like he should have been frozen, like staring at a snake. He ran to his car, which wasn't locked, slammed the locks down, started the car, and floored it, getting out of there. As he's leaving, he looks in the rear view, and this thing is running after the car. He always swore somehow this thing followed him home. He was paralyzed in an accident not long after, and I went to care for him for a little while. I brought my 4-year-old son with me, and in his typical baby way, he would chatter away while the two of us were talking. I asked him one day who he was talking to. My son said, "He said his name is Biter. He has long teeth and he lives with Mr. John." I grabbed my son and ran out of there. I never went back to that house. Next story. Well, one son was a newspaper delivery person in rural Georgia. I usually drove my route between 2 to 4 a.m. down all sorts of dirt roads, rally cross-style, flinging papers along the way. It was mostly fun, and I had some neat interactions with rabbits, sometimes racing me on the road and near missing owls. However, I was always at least partly creeped out for the entire ride with a completely unrealistic and supernatural fear that I was never really driving alone. I was afraid that at some point, something from the back seat would come out of the darkness and whisper in my ear. Anyway, getting to the most notable creepy part, I only ever saw 3 people during my times on the route. Once when I drove up on a wreck, another when someone ran me off the road, and a third time. There was one road I always drove down the fastest because it was the creepiest. No lights, no houses, just long fences down a perfectly straight road that was hypnotically long. Only interruption in scene that my headlights could shine light on along the way was an old-style barn with a hayloft and a second story for the loft. I never wanted to look at it, but ended up glancing at it every night as I drove by. Always the same. Tall, creepy, old, leaning, door locked, moving shadows, gone. One night, as I was approaching, I noticed the door swinging out open. Of course, I had to look this time. As I drove past, I glimpsed a pale person in a nightgown standing in the doorway. I actually slammed on my brakes and reversed, wondering if what I saw was real. The person or apparition was gone, and I never saw the door open again for as long as I drove that route. Next story. I was driving my flatbed from St. Helena, California to Wylie, Texas. This happened somewhere near the Texahoma border. I picked up a hitchhiker. He was standing by the side of the road with a trembling thumb out. Trembling from the cold, maybe? Soon I would learn that this was a trembling of fear. The trembling of a man who looked as though he had seen a ghost. Where to? I asked. Please, I know this is weird. Just take me to a bar, for I need a drink. I'll buy you a drink or a hot sandwich. I thought this was odd. I've picked up many hitchhikers in my day, and such a request was never asked. I was about to say, get lost, buddy. Whatever you're selling, I'm not buying. But I looked into the man's eyes and I saw terror. Something compelled me to open my passenger door for this man. He entered. At the bar, the hitchhiker began his tale. Earlier on this night of torrential rain, the hitchhiker was seeking a ride. Next to the road, he sat with his thumb out. For hours, he waited in the rain. A few cars passed, but none slowed. Frustrated, the hitchhiker was about to rest his thumb and find shelter for the night. Then he saw headlights of a very slow approaching car. The hitchhiker eagerly approached the car, waiting for it to stop. Oddly, the slow-moving car continued drifting forward. Maybe the pace was slowing, or maybe this car was always moving at such a slow speed. But this car never came to a complete stop. The headlights pierced the rain as the hitchhiker stood confused. Will this car stop? Perhaps I should get in. I've never seen a car drive so slowly like this. The hitchhiker decided to just jump in the car. He stumbled in the rain as he pulled the passenger door and had a seat. To his horror, there was no one in the driver's seat. There was no one in the back seat. The car was bare, but it kept moving forward, the headlights still on, but now in front of him as he looked out of the windshield as the car continued to creep forward. The hitchhiker quickly exited the ghost car, ran for miles. He rested. He ran some more, rested, ran some more. Finally, after catching his breath, he stuck out his thumb and stood by the road. The hitchhiker then saw headlights, but this time the car was driving at a reasonable pace. It wasn't a car at all, it was a flatbed truck. This is where the hitchhiker and I met. The bartender brought the hitchhiker and me our beer. The service at this bar sucked. And then two men, drenched in rain, came running into the bar. They pointed at the hitchhiker. Hey, there's that idiot that tried jumping into our car as we were pushing it through the rain. Next story. My dad drove trucks during the 1970s oil embargo. One night he broke down in rural Pennsylvania. He had to walk down the highway a couple of miles back to a restaurant to use the phone and call dispatch. After the phone call, he walked back to the truck. There was no moon, and because of the oil embargo, the highway was deserted. From the tree line on the side of the highway came the crack of an enormous tree branch breaking, and then some movement. My dad stopped and called out. He thought it might be someone fooling around or a hunter in the woods, odd as that would be at that time of night. No answer came from the trees, and my dad continued towards his busted rig. But all the way to the truck, he was sure he heard something following him from the trees, matching his own footsteps. He locked himself in the truck and waited, uneventfully, until help arrived. Another night, again in the 1970s, Pennsylvania, in the mountains, a strange figure ran in front of my dad's truck. It looked to my dad, who had not heard of Bigfoot yet, that it was a man in a gorilla costume. When he arrived at his destination, he told some of the men working there what he had seen, and asked if any of them had seen a guy in a gorilla costume running around in the mountain roads. They thought my dad was nuts. Those are my dad's two experiences with what he believes was Bigfoot. Next story. Well, while going to school, I would often join a friend of mine who worked for a moving company. We would pack up people's homes and deliver the goods and unpack it at their new residence. I can't recall which state we were in, but we stopped for the evening at a Love's. There was an active tornado about 5 miles away, and we were watching it while drinking a few beers before passing out. The manager of Love's and a group of 4 or 5 guys pulled up and asked if we'd seen a huge man wandering around the parking lot. The way these guys described the size of the man implied he was a goddamn giant. Apparently, 3 or 4 days before, a driver had vanished while his tractor trailer was 7 or 8 blocks away from the Loves. He never contacted his employer, so they used a GPS transponder in the rig to track down the location. There was no sign of the driver. The previous evening, a huge man was caught underneath a parked rig, clutching the undercarriage like the beast monster in Big Trouble Little China. A driver in a parked rig nearby saw the man crawling around down there and called the Loves, but the man vanished. He had been spotted several times in the last 24 hours lurking around the parking lot, so we were warned to keep an eye out for him and to contact the police or Loves that we spotted him. About 30 minutes later, a giant man covered in filth walks by our truck, covered in grease, dirt, and a fair amount of blood. He's also about 6'5", weighs 250, maybe even 300 pounds. My wingman called the cops, and I followed the guy a few hundred feet behind him. I was smoking a cigarette at the time, and he abruptly turned around, and I continued walking in the same direction, pretending I have no idea who he is. The man had the eyes of a feral raccoon and asked to bum a smoke, which I provided. He then continued to walk away, and I lost sight of him as he passed between a row of trucks. I continued to walk in that direction, but as soon as I rounded the parked truck, he had vanished. Cops came and continued to look for him, but to no avail. Needless to say, we didn't get much sleep between the crazy man and the freaking tornado. And I want to clarify, the giant crazy man was the missing driver of the abandoned semi. In other words, he didn't eat or kill the other guy. Then there was another trip when we were in Southern California, picking up a load from a private residence. Everything was supposed to be packed and staged for us, so all we had to do was load our trailer and be on our way. But nothing was packed, and the client was not there nor answering the number we had been provided. Eventually, a neighbor came over with the keys to the house, and we realized nothing was packed. The neighbor is behaving strangely and wouldn't enter the house and had no interest in speaking to us. After calling the main office, we then began to pack the house up. It was a nice upper-middle-class neighborhood and home. The entire house was spotless except one of the back bedrooms. The room, a female child's room, was thrashed. I'm not talking about dirty, but literally destroyed. Mattress was literally ripped into multiple pieces. There was a huge birdcage mangled into the size of a softball. Multiple holes in the walls. Broken picture frames on the walls, and every single item in the room in a huge homogeneous pile on the floor. I vividly recall the sliding closet door smashed into the sheetrock in the walls across from the closet, having deep gouges in them, and were broken in a way that implied significant force was used from inside the closet. No family pets. Neighbors eventually confirmed, though, that there was the birdcage based upon there not being any food or dish for them. House had some creepy-ass vibes before discovering that room, and afterwards, we couldn't get out of there fast enough. When we were moving our prep gear, mats and pads, so we didn't damage walls while moving the furniture, the neighbor returned. I asked what was the story with these people. Mangled room and not being on site or answering their phone. He gave us some background. The family owned the house. Wife, dad, one daughter, age 12, had quadriplegic daughter. They had lived in the house about 2 years before the daughter started reporting hearing strange voices and noises in the night. A series of progressive incidents culminated in some event that resulted in the kids' room being destroyed one night and the family fleeing the house and refusing to return to it. I was hoping that when we got to the destination for their stuff, the family would be there so that I could hear the story firsthand. But it was a storage facility in Washington, and I never had the opportunity to learn more. The image of the kids' room stuck with me because of how completely destroyed everything was in contrast to the rest of the household.